Welcome to our series of shows about mental health in association with Lambeth Public Health, with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Patrick Vernon, OBE. On today's show, we will be raising awareness of mental health services that are available in Lambeth.
Colourful.
Lambeth colourful, Mental colourful, Health Radio Show.
Colourful Radio.
Joining us in the studio today, we have Neil Robertson, who is the director of Lambeth Living Well Network Alliance. And also we have Natalie Creary, who is the Programme Delivery Director at Black Thrive. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
The first question I wanted to ask you is if you could sort of tell us a little bit about the organisations you work for and the services that they offer. So I'll start with you first, Natalie.
Okay, so Black Thrive is a partnership between communities, statutory organisations, and other organisations that have an influence on the health and wellbeing outcomes of Black communities. So our work is really about how we reduce the mental health inequality that we see that Black people experience, and really thinking about how do you improve people's access to services once they're accessing these services, how we improve their experience within services, because we know that Black people have poorest mental health outcomes, and then also the prevention element. So how do we work together collaboratively in order to prevent people from becoming ill in the first place?
Okay, so Neil, can you tell us a little bit about the Lambeth Living Well Network Alliance?
So the Living Well Network Alliance came into being in July 2018. And it's a partnership between South London Maudsley NHS Foundation Trust, Lambeth Council, Thames Reach, which is a voluntary sector organisation, Certitude, which is a mental health and learning disability voluntary sector organisation, Lambeth Council, and Lambeth Clinical Commissioning Group. The purpose of the alliance is to meet three big outcomes that were designed by and developed by the community, and that's for people to recover and stay well, for people to have choice around the care and support they need, and also for people to participate on an equal footing in their daily lives as everybody else within the community. What we specifically need to address in Lambeth in relation to adult mental health services is to get improved access, to reduce the fragmentation that people experience going from one team to another, for people to have personalised collaborative care, for us to make the best use of our resources, both money and our human resources, and importantly, to address the inequalities in relation to the services that the mental health services that people have received in the past in Lambeth, particularly our Black communities.
Okay, Patrick.
So, hi, Natalie. Can you just tell us a bit of the conditions which has an impact on the mental health well-being of the Black community in Lambeth?
Okay, so it might be helpful just to for us to kind of think about all of the factors that impact on our health and well-being. So the literature shows that probably about 10% of our overall health outcomes is directly related to our access to services. So we need to start thinking about our health and well-being outcomes much more broadly, and that's considering things that what we often call the wider determinants or social determinants of health, which is, you know, employment, our education, the broader political environment. So it's really starting to think about the structural barriers. And that's one of the things that we are kind of focusing on in Black Thrive, is trying to understand the Black experience more broadly than just services, but thinking about those social determinants. So we're pulling data from our statutory partners, so from education, from the criminal justice system, housing, and so on, to kind of understand how Black people, you know, what Black people are experiencing. And what that's showing is that there are numerous structural barriers that we're facing, that in terms of we're experiencing inequality across virtually every part of our social lives. So whether that be housing, whether that be in the education system. So we are, as a community, experience quite significant stressors. And I think what has been helpful for us is, you know, a service can look at their own data and say, oh, you know, Black people aren't doing so well in our service. But when you see that happening across the piece, you then really have that argument that this is kind of systemic and this is structural, so therefore our response needs to be different. And I think for Black people, yes, this is the situation for Black people in Lambeth, but actually this is a global phenomena. You know, I would imagine in any borough, if you're looking at the experiences of Black people, they'll be experiencing multiple disadvantage. And that's, again, not to say that all Black people experience disadvantage, because that's not the case, but what we are seeing is, you know, is a pattern of inequality that really needs to be addressed sort of more systematically.
Mm-hmm. I suppose one of the key issues is the vexed question about the issue around over-representation, particularly of Black men in the psychiatric system. We've been exploring that as part of our programmes as well, hearing the experiences of Black men and also women as well, and the whole stuff around intersectionality. What is required to reflect that diversity of experience in services and policy change at the local and even at the national level?
So I think first and foremost, it's kind of understanding the complexity of the Black experience, that we're not all a homogenous group. And I suppose also kind of reflecting on the fact that actually this is structural, and having those conversations about racism and how that manifests itself in society, and how that shapes our policies and practices that negatively impact on Black people. Mm. I think that it's also a recognition that we do need to start focusing on things that are being that are culturally appropriate, I think is really important. And that recognition that a lot of things that have been designed have often been through a Eurocentric lens and are not necessarily really designed with us in mind. And so we've got to get to a point that, although there might be the evidence base for particular approaches and methods, that actually if they haven't been designed for Black people with Black people, it's unlikely that they are going to be effective. And so we need to kind of take a different approach.
Sure. So Neil, obviously in terms of the Alliance, this is quite an ambitious programme. What would be the outcome of the success? Because obviously for everyone in Lambeth, in terms of improving services for adults, but more particularly the Black experience, what would you see as a key indicator of success for the Alliance over the next few years?
So I think that one of the things that we've identified is that because we have a lot to do in Lambeth, that's why our partnership is actually a 7-year contract, because we recognise that we really need to transform services so it's meeting everybody's needs. That unfortunately can't happen in weeks, months or even a year. I think that in terms of thinking about what we would see differently is that there would be a reduction in the number of people who find themselves in the most restrictive part of the system, that's in the inpatient care, and particularly Black men, and that actually they're getting help earlier in a meaningful way, and that they're also receiving a culturally appropriate care and support. So I think that the whole emphasis of our programme, which is for everybody, is about us being proactive and making sure that people get easy access in and easy access and easy out in terms of step back to more local community-based support and care. I think that what also is going to be really, really important is about how we develop services which are co-designed by communities that actually can engage people, give them the support, and try and reduce the fear and anxiety that people have at the moment about getting help.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really, really important thing that we need to focus on.
Yeah.
So in terms of the way you talk about transformation services, do you want to give a kind of indicator of the top services that you're reviewing or thinking, and maybe Natalie, what do you think the solutions are in terms of the Alliance and the work that Black Friday is doing? So maybe Neil, this transformational agenda, what would it look like for people on the ground in the community?
So just to give a little bit of background, so the Alliance are responsible, as I said earlier, for all the adult mental health services. That's the inpatient units, that's the psychological therapy services, and that's the community mental health teams and the crisis services. So before, there were lots and lots of different teams, and the issue around fragmentation and access for people was because it was there were too many teams to navigate. So the centrepiece of what we've done is to create three Living Well centres, which will provide nearly all the care that people need under one roof in relation to community support. And we have actually just started moving into those centres over the last month or so. In terms of actually getting access, what we've developed is a single point of access where either a GP, concerned people, or people themselves who are worried about their mental health can get support. And what we're doing is we're doing a very simple assessment over the phone, and then the person who does that assessment makes the decision where is the best place for that person to go. And actually, in the main, they're getting one assessment. They'll go to a new service and they might want to ask some supplementary questions, but we're actually trying to reduce the number of assessments so that people, because it feels intrusive,
yeah,
and sometimes it feels really, really frustrating.
Or time consuming as well, time, yeah, for them to actually get the help they need.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the other thing that we think is really important is the development of a crisis outreach service. So before, if you turned up at your GP and you're in crisis, your only option was A&E on that day, or you'd be seen by services the next day. The crisis outreach service, which will be Monday through to Sunday, actually, for some people who really need that emergent crisis support, can actually get help within 4 hours. What's been really important about that, and what we're seeing, it's early days, but what we're seeing is that actually we are offering more support to people in crisis than we did last year, because we're working more with people's subjective or their own personal perspective on crisis rather than looking at specific rigid criteria. So that's something that we're that seems really positive and we're particularly proud of. Going forward, what we do want to be able to do is to perhaps develop services that are more culturally appropriate, have the right skills and competency, and actually engage people away from that notion of a clinical setting, so that we can so that those services can work with people to get them to get the right help, and that's something that we're particularly focusing on at the moment. We also want to be able to create a non-clinical safe space, which is for people in crisis who just need either some peer support or just some group support at times of crisis in a conducive and non-threatening environment. We're also particularly keen to be able to ensure that we're working with our colleagues in the police to make sure that actually people are getting the right help sooner, because it is a real challenge that people are not getting help and their circumstances and their crisis become so bad that when police involvement happens in those instances, it's traumatic. And we want to make sure that we are, I suppose, through various offers, trying to make sure that we're as proactive as possible.
So Natalie, from your perspective, I know that you're on the board of the Alliance as well, and obviously you're working closely with Neil and the rest of the ecosystem of Lambeth. Are there any particular solutions that you are working on in terms of Black Friday, in terms of the lens that you're wearing?
So for us, it's really important that the voice of communities is placed at the centre. So I guess our challenge to the broader system is, you know, rather than you coming up with a solution, actually, if you involve communities in the first instance, you're more likely to design something that would be appropriate. So that's something that we kind of work to kind of convene people who have, you know, all forms of expertise to kind of, you know, try to shape some of these services. I suppose for us, we also think that it's important that we think about like workforce representation. So we're currently working with our partners to look at that in terms of people from Black communities being a kind of a core part of the workforce, but also making decisions at kind of senior level. Some of the other things that we're working with the Alliance is around kind of developing their culturally appropriate peer support and advocacy. So again, it's sort of like working from the ground up so that communities are actually shaping what that looks like. So I think that's going to be quite an exciting piece of work. And it's been really helpful working with the Alliance around that at the moment. I think for us, I think a gap is around black-led provision.
Yeah.
I think that is, you know, something that we really need to start focusing on, so that actually it's black people delivering solutions for their own communities and for the broader system to see their role, rather than kind of leading on this, that actually they're in a supportive.
Yeah, because it's interesting, because historically, if you look at Lambeth and other parts of London, there were lots of black-led services back in the day, and the question is, what's happened, and what is there a need? How do you kind of kickstart that again?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of this is structural, isn't it?
Yeah.
And kind of also, I suppose us, or society, believing that we're in a post-racial society, and that kind of mainstream provision, because equalities has been embedded, theoretically, that they would be able to respond to that. And I think what we're seeing is that's not necessarily the case. And so in some circumstances, provision that is focusing specifically on the inequality within the inequality, is required. And I think, again, I suppose these are the conversations that we are having with the system, that actually if you're a black-led organisation, you're less likely to be invested in, which is kind of ironic when the kind of the need or the demand is often kind of higher and also more complex. And so it's really important that if you are going to have generic services, they need to be able to respond to the nuances of the black experience. You know, your experience as a black Caribbean person is probably quite different to being from black African background. Your migration history, again, will probably have an impact in terms of your experiences in this society, as well as your experience of the services.
So, Neil, if someone's in crisis in Lambeth, what advice would you give? Where can people go for advice or information?
So, in terms of thinking about people who are in crisis, they can contact the single point of access on 0800 090 2456. Also, we have information on the Lambeth Together website. The Living Well Network Alliance has a series of web pages which has got information about services, the single point of access, as I said, will take self-referrals and again get people if people, it's not felt that the mental health services are giving them the right support at that time, then what that single point of access will do is try and work really hard with people to get them signposted to another part of the system, so that they're getting their help, particularly where there are a significant social issues that people feel very disempowered and distressed around.
And lastly, how do people get involved with Black Thrive and follow the work that you're doing?
So yeah, there are lots of ways of getting involved. So we're particularly interested in people who have lived, hearing from people who have lived experience of the mental health system, people who are perhaps working in, a range of occupations from, mental health all the way through to kind of housing. And so I suppose in terms of getting in contact with us, if you go to our website, which is www.blackthrive.org.uk, you can find us on Twitter at Black Thrive, and you can also call us on 0207 274 8522, and email us at hello@blackthrive.org.uk.
Great, and all this information will be on the Colourful website as well for everyone to access the information. Just like to thank both of you, can continue the hard work. I know it's a hard slog out there, but it's about integration, isn't it? And co-production.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we're seeing movement. We're seeing that the system is starting to kind of listen and to take action. I guess the key is going to be the difference that it makes for black people in their day-to-day lives.
Mental health seems to be like a topic that people are much more open to discussing in their families and with their friends. Have you noticed the difference in, say, the last couple of years in terms of the amount of people coming forward to seek help?
So I think that what we see, particularly now talking therapy services, is that it's reasonably representative, the people being who are attending those services are reasonably representative of the local community. So I think that there is something about actually how people are seeking help. But people, I think, will seek help more in the most informal setting. You know, and I think that we need to create more platforms and spaces so that we can do that, because there's a lot of fear around those people who are in the most restrictive part of the system and how they got there. So I think that, you know, we may be seeing some shift, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we don't deliver services, so in terms of service provision, but I think one of the things that we have noticed is that people are more open to speaking about mental health. And I think increasingly, well, one of the messages that we're trying to get across is that actually experiences of poor mental well-being is just a natural response to the stresses that we experience on a day-to-day basis. And I think if we can start to understand it from a more structural perspective, then I think that's also kind of quite helpful, because it's not something that's inherently inherent problem within yourself, but actually it's just a natural response to, you know, the inequalities that you're experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely. So much food for thought. It's been lovely having you both in the studio and sharing your experience and expertise on such an important topic. We have been speaking to Natalie Creary, who is the Programme Delivery Director at Black Thrive, and we have also had Neil Robertson, who is the Director of the Lambeth Living Well Network Alliance. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
Colourful
Lambeth Mental Health Radio Show.
Colourful Radio.
We will be discussing the mental health experience of one person and how we can improve the services that are available to us. So firstly, I want to welcome Tutiet Thomas, who's in the studio with me. Welcome.
Hi.
And also, we have joining with you some supports and friends, Chino and Hilna. Please say hi to our listeners.
Hi.
Okay, now, Tutiet, I wanted to ask you firstly, through your experience with mental health and being a person of the community, what sort of observations have you made in terms of the services that are available to us as a community?
So I live with lupus, which affects my physical and mental health. I was diagnosed in 2003. My physical health needs are being met, but the mental health needs are not. And there's this strong correlation between being a minority ethnicity and developing lupus, developing autoimmune conditions. And the research suggests it's around acculturative stress. So there are currently no NICE guidelines, to my knowledge, for an acculturative stress care pathway. And also bringing in our experience of being migrants, second generation to the UK. My mother came to the UK when she was 14 from Guyana to join my grandmother. And the invite went out to the Caribbean and to the African colonies to come and help rebuild this country after the war. But yet there was nothing in place to meet the needs of the young people who often left their children in the country of origin. So there was knowledge of the effect of broken attachments on families, but there were no policies in place. And you had experts in the field like Dr. Elaine Arnold, who had knowledge of this, but yet no policies were put in place. So still today, 2019, we don't have a care pathway for people living with broken attachments through migration. So I think that's the starting point, really. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to a lack of cultural competency in mental health services, in psychology and psychiatry here in the UK. And
I think dealing with an illness, like what you're saying, with that is so serious, like lupus, and there's not really that support network, as well as you saying about this broken attachment from your mother and grandmother coming over here and sort of leaving children behind. It seems like a really pressurizing sort of life to live. I mean, what sort of support have you had? You brought your friends with you today, which is fantastic.
how do they
cope seeing you in these situations?
So, okay, these are my friends, but these are also professionals that are seeking to improve services for our community in the UK.
Could you introduce yourselves and tell us what you do and how you think we can improve services in the UK?
Sure. So my name is Hilna Fontaine, and I have a community interest company called Mabadiliko. Mabadiliko means change in Swahili. And the work I do is really about trying to get particularly those involved in mental health professionals, to do the work of becoming what I call woke. So they've been talking about cultural competence for some time, but cultural competence causes us to look at the other and how we can, learning about the other, whereas cultural humility, what I'm pushing for, causes us to self-reflect, look at ourselves, what do we bring to the proverbial table that might be causing the disparities that are well documented now, including racism and discrimination it being experienced by BME staff in the workplace. Mm. And we know that's impacting on the services that these organisations, NHS, SLAM, are providing as well. So my work is trying to get us all to be able to have a conversation about race, instead of avoiding it for too long. Neither of us can talk about it. I won't talk about it because I don't want to be called an angry black woman. They won't talk about it. White people won't talk about it because they don't want to be called a racist. So it means we've been silenced. All of us have been silenced for some time, and it's now socially unacceptable to talk about race. So what happens in that therapeutic space? If I've experienced discrimination in the workplace and I'm one of that 20-odd% that's left my job because of it, what support am I getting? Who do I go to if the main provider can't talk about race, are uncomfortable, don't acknowledge privilege, don't acknowledge that we all have unconscious bias, we all have biases, and it's a journey, you know, it's not something that we can resolve in one workshop in one day. So it's our approach to what we do and how we can get comfortable, particularly those professionals being comfortable talking about these issues and being able to intuit racism in somebody instead of me having to say, this is internalized racism I'm experiencing here. Maybe I haven't got the languages yet. So I need the professional to be able to tune in.
And Chino, could you introduce yourselves and tell us what you do as well and how you think the overall services can be improved?
Oh, yeah, sure. Chino is Cole. I've been in the trust for nearly 20 years. And what I've observed is there's a huge gap between people living with mental health conditions and the services out there. And when you look around, you are more likely to be labeled due to the stigma of mental health. And then what we're saying is we need this support to be out there for people to easily assess them. And the struggle is always there. And what we're doing is there's so much talk politically, oh, we're going to invest in this, we are going to do this, we are going to do that. But when you scratch down the surface, there's nothing out there. And as a young black man, I'm more likely going to be labeled as, you know, being aggressive or something if I want to speak up. So supporting someone that is going through the journey of living with mental health conditions, you're kind of holding yourself back. Due to on one side, you want to, you know, carry on doing your work. On the other hand, you see your loved ones struggle with these conditions. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, this is something that should be addressed. And, you know, that pushed me into doing what I'm trying to do now, which is dementia care. I just qualified as a dementia care advisor specialist.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much. And so you still see the same gap, the same thing that we have in mental health, we still have in dementia care. So I'm looking at my beloved loved ones living with a condition, and they're looking for help. And then they're telling you, there's help there. Where is it? How can we assess this help? Mm. You know, so through these journeys, we're hoping that if we can push more awareness and begin to, you know, press buttons and ask people for support without fear of being labeled as being aggressive, perhaps we could get somewhere. But to think about 2019 and we're still trying to find people to say, yes, something is actually not right. It's quite a bit depressing to see young people, our people, especially in our communities, going through this journey without getting the support they want. But you hear a lot of talk, oh, we're investing in this, we're investing in that. Mm. But it's not, you know, we can no longer continue to pretend that this is not out there. Yeah. And there's always this fear, like I said, of being labeled as being aggressive. If you speak up, how would they see you? So that is one of the things that we need to address and make people understand that it's not being aggressive. It's somebody actually telling you there's something going on. You need to listen to us. They're not listening to us. So I'm setting up something now called Dementia Care Experience and Workshops. My hope is to push dementia out there to begin to discuss it. And I want to incorporate mental health as well. We need to push this. Our people can no longer be living with this. And we pretend that all is going to happen. It's not happening. We need it to happen now.
Yeah. I mean, for you too, Tiet, is that something that you also agree with through your experience?
Yes. So in 2005, my mother was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And her background is education. She would go take her... She was self-employed and... gain contracts with schools in South London to deliver counselling to children at risk of exclusion. She worked in PRUs. So she developed Parkinson's, and her philosophy was that our children are under assault in schools. They're traumatised every day. Young black boys are told that they're aggressive when they're being playful and got a lot of energy. So she didn't have a lot of confidence in the education system to educate African children. And so that translated to the healthcare system as well. And so she opted for... African traditional medicine for her treatment of Parkinson's. And there is treatment, but mm-hmm. it's not in the NICE guidelines.
Right.
So we saw how health and social care let her down, really. She died in 2018, September 28th, 2018. Waiting for the treatment to which she was entitled, but
That's
it's not
awful.
an approved medicine. And this all comes under Afrophobia. There's a lot of work to do, but if we all work together, we can take the steps towards integrating African traditional medicine.
Yeah.
Into state-funded health and social care.
We've heard that a lot, actually, from the professionals that we've spoken to on these series of shows, that there needs to be more of a cultural understanding or sort of perspective when it comes to treating people from our community mm-hmm. with mental health issues or even, you know, other illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at, you know, how can we treat them culturally? What sort of mm-hmm. traditional medicines or talking mm-hmm. therapies or different things
yeah.
we can do
mm-hmm.
to reach the black community mm-hmm. that can help them? I mm-hmm. mean, traditional medicine is great, but a lot of the professionals we've spoken to are saying, look, we might have to try something else
mm-hmm.
because these NHS stuff is not working.
Yeah. So it's evidence-based African traditional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So things like her physiotherapy. So it was very clinical, what is in the NICE guidelines. And a culturally competent physiotherapy for somebody from of African ancestry would involve movement, music, participatory, communal therapy, exercise. And it was just a matter of it being commissioned.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only barrier. But because there isn't cultural competence in the it depends on the CCG that you live under. as to whether or not these services get commissioned. Mm. And it is down to Afrophobia. You get the sniggers and the laughs when you say, well, how about some drumming? How about some dancing?
Yeah.
How about some choral music?
How about what that does to us, yeah. You know?
How about instead of your meals on wheels with your meat and two veg, you have some, traditional Guyanese mm-hmm. soup, metemji.
Mm-hmm.
If you're from Senegal, some traditional jollof rice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are not your standard cuisines that yeah. People and some for. So we're Southwark residents. Southwark has the largest African diaspora of any local authority in the country, and yet there aren't these contracts already in place to make sure that our elders are getting the food that they actually enjoy mm-hmm. and that will actually nourish their body and keep them strong.
And also remind them of home. Right. Give them a feel-good feeling. If you're suffering with mental health, you want to feel good. So eating a plate of food that might remind you of your childhood back in Ghana, back in Jamaica or Guyana, wherever it may be, that's going to do something for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like there needs to be like an overhaul of the complete system in my eyes.
And the thing is, it's very piecemeal. So some local authorities have the right idea. So if you're registered with a Greenwich GP, you can access talking therapies in the African language of your choice.
Fantastic.
Including the Creoles and the Patois. But in Lambeth, you can't access that. Lewisham. In Southwark, you can't access that.
In Lewisham, you can't access mm-hmm. that. But I think a big part of the problem is the way services are commissioned. And we can't get there because the system or the way in which organisations have been racialised or the system is racialised, it means that as a provider of a black caterer, for example, can't get to be commissioned to deliver work because very often or most of the time we find we don't meet the criteria. And so we can't be commissioned or procured to deliver work or services to our people until that changes, until they open up the process and perhaps offer grants or look at other ways of contracting with the BME organisations that can deliver services, nothing's going to change because they procure with the same people over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, time is actually running out, but I'm really fascinated about this conversation.
One thing to mention that we are in the UN International mm-hmm. Decade for People of African Descent. So under this UN mechanism, there's an opportunity for institutions to engage and to address historical and cultural trauma for people of African ancestry. And I think that can galvanize us as the community, yeah. right up to the strategic level, to ensure that this doesn't continue. This is we're about to go into 2020. This, you know, we should be able to draw a line under this and move towards healing and restorative justice is what it's all a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could talk all day. I'm so sorry we've run out of time, but it's been fantastic having you in the studio. We should maybe have you come back in again and give you some more time.
Nice.
But
we didn't get to talk about African spirituality and how that
We will have to arrange Hatus yet and Hilna and Chino come back. Yeah, thank you so much for talking to us about your experience with mental health and also the services and how they can be improved.
Colorful.
Lambeth Mental Health Radio Show.
Colorful Radio.
Joining us in the studio is Dr. Chanel Myrie, who is a clinical psychologist and the joint head of the mental health promotion team at SLAM.
Hi there, Chanel.
Hi.
So you're a clinical psychologist, and there's probably not a lot of clinical psychologists in Britain. Can you tell me about how you got involved in the field of mental health in the first place?
Yes.
As your career as a psychologist?
Okay, so it started off, I did my undergrad degree. I did my undergrad degree in psychology and philosophy, actually. And then whilst I was doing my degree, I did my third year project, which was looking at assessing racial prejudice, and that went really well. I was really interested in it, and afterwards I thought, okay, I want to do a master's in social psychology. But I looked at the LSE, and the cost of doing that social psychology master's were £20,000. £20,000. Mm. I didn't have £20,000. Then someone else said to me, oh, you know, if you train as a clinical psychologist, they'll pay you to get a qualification. And so I sort of feel slightly fraudulent because although I was really interested in clinical psychology, I'd heard that it was really competitive and that you'll never get on. And so I just put it to one side. But it was more for financial reasons that I thought, yeah, I'm going to go for it. So I got experience working in a really great BME specific mental health service called the Aremi Centre. It was based in Edgware Road.
With Malcolm Phillips?
With lovely Malcolm Phillips. Okay. He was absolutely wonderful to me and really, really encouraging. And that sort of started me off on my journey.
Yeah. I know I've been to quite a few events over the last year or so, and there seems to be a real big campaign now around the issue of underrepresentation of black people working as psychologists, psychotherapists and psychiatrists in the system. What's happening there? What's happening with the talent pipeline?
Yeah.
Because without that talent pipeline, how we can have that proper representation around cultural property services, corporate proper diagnosis and types of interventions around services?
Yeah. In my view, there is a massive problem with how people get onto clinical psychology training. So from my experience, personal experience as well, there is a kind of... it is assumed that if you want to become a psychologist, at some point your skill and your knowledge and your time must be given up for free. And so the first rung on the ladder to getting onto training will be working in some sort of honorary capacity and voluntary capacity. And obviously, as we know, only people that can afford to do that will do that. So I had to work for free, but I had to work three jobs in order to be able to bring in the money to be able to work for free. And I think that clinical psychology really needs to address that if they're really honest about trying to make the work, this clinical psychology workforce, as diverse as possible.
Sure. So you're Joint Head of Health Promotion at Maudsley SLAM, as we use. What's the work of health promotion in the context of mental health and wellbeing that you're doing?
Okay. So the mental health promotion team has sort of two main camps, if you like. So on one camp is trying to raise awareness of mental health difficulties and doing that by training. So we offer quite a lot of different training courses, so mental health first aid or stress awareness courses, well-being interventions, mindfulness, and that's really helpful for people to gain knowledge and information about what mental health actually is, what it looks like, what they can do to support others, how to direct people that they might come into contact with in order to get the appropriate support. But what we also do is have a range of community development projects running at the same time, which is working with people in local communities on aspects of mental health and wellbeing that are important to them to show that actually change can happen from bottom up as well.
So what advice and tips would you give to people who are listening to the show about how they can cope with their issues around mental health and wellbeing or the anxiety, mild forms of depression, etc.?
Yeah. So the first thing that I would probably say is think about how you want to construct the issue that you're experiencing. Because I know you were just sort of saying depression, anxiety, but lots of people won't use those labels to describe how they're feeling. And I think sometimes when people use their own language, it can kind of have more resonance, or it has more... more impactful in their lives than using terms that they don't really feel comfortable with. The second thing is, I work as a clinical psychologist, but support can happen in a variety of different places. So for some people, that might be receiving therapy from a statutory organisation, but for other people, it might be connecting with their faith, it might be getting out with, you know, at one with nature and going for walks, it might be thinking about your nutrition, what you're putting into your body. So I know that sometimes we can get quite kind of focused on, you know, therapy and medication and things like that, but well-being is much broader than that. And then thirdly, I would say, if you come to the conclusion that actually therapy is for you and you want to give it a try, shop around. Therapy is a relationship between you and another person. Just like there are loads of people that you connect with and other people that you don't connect with, it's exactly the same with finding a therapist that's going to help you. Don't be afraid to try one out. And if it feels like it's not right, try someone else.
I know you've been working, been some TV stuff. You worked closely with David Harewood on the acclaimed BBC documentary. What was the experience working with David Harewood? And what is required around solutions for the black community in a place like Lambeth, where there's still massive overrepresentation?
Yeah.
And even though there's lots of investment in new services, is it reaching the community?
Right, okay. So first thing, working with David Harewood was lovely. He was really, really nice. He was really, really, really open, really willing to sort of think about and be really kind of transparent about his experiences. So I work clinically as a clinical psychologist in a service that supports people having their first episode of psychosis. Mm-hmm. And so I know that mental health in general is still really stigmatized, but talking about psychosis is even more stigmatizing. And I found it really inspiring that he felt able to use his platform to talk about something that has so much stigma still attached to it. So that was great. And I felt really honored to be able to bring that narrative to TVs where we're talking about a black man's experiences of psychosis. To my mind, I don't think I've seen anything like that on TV before. Mm. And the response that we got from people showed that it was really worthwhile. Mm. And then your second question was thinking about, sorry, can you repeat, was it about services?
Yeah,
SAM?
There's a range of services in Lambeth, and we've been exploring that with a whole range of organisations. But are the community reaching those services? Is it the whole kind of revolving door? Is it access? Is it structural racism? Is it people don't know? Is it lack of information?
Oh gosh, it's all of the above, Patrick. It's all of the above. So I think if we're sort of talking about institutional racism, I think that services are starting to change, but I think they really need to take ownership of what it means to offer an accessible and an acceptable service. So I think lots of changes are happening, but sometimes I worry that those changes are happening in a way that don't necessarily tap into the people that they need to reach. And we really need to think creatively about things like accessibility. So how is it that we can truly say that we're offering an accessible service? Are we literally going into communities? Are we going to where people are? Are we asking people what is it that's going to make a difference to your well-being and providing what they say will make a difference? To my mind, we're not quite there yet. The other thing that I'm always aware of is that when I meet people for the first time, the narrative that exists for mental health services, particularly in SLAM's four boroughs, you know, the ideas about what happens when you go to the Maudsley and being over medicated and being sectioned, all of those narratives are really live for people when they come to my service for the first time. So SLAM probably has to do some thinking about how we're going to change that narrative, the public face of SLAM. How are we going to show people that we are changing as opposed to just doing all of this work internally?
Okay.
Finally, time has just ran away with us. I mean, we could speak to you for ages about everything. Where can people reach you online or reach SLAM online if they need some sort of help and support?
Okay, so SLAM have a website, www.slam.nhs.uk. So there's lots of information about the variety of different services that are available. How can people reach me? I have an email address. I can leave that. Should I leave that with you?
Yep, we can pop all the links on our on our website. Yep, that's fine.
So yeah, I don't do social media or anything like that. I'm a dinosaur.
Okay. Thank you. So you're looking after your mental health by not doing social media, because social media and people's mental health, there seems to be some sort of correlation.
This is it. So when, I mean, particularly now with all the sort of election results, when you sort of look online, you can see that actually sometimes it can be quite a precarious place to be and to sort of have your identity up on there.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I'm not quite there yet.
Okay.
But I do emails.
Okay, fantastic. We'll put all those on our website. Thank you so much. That was Dr. Chanel Myrie, a clinical psychologist and the joint head of mental health promotions at Slam. She was talking to me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host Patrick Vernon, OBE.
Colourful.
Lambeth Mental Health Radio Show.
Colourful Radio.